The Big Interview, part of Ida Hobbit 2021 on Pride Radio. In conversation with Peter Tatchell.
With Sunderland LGBT Plus Network, supporting, educating and celebrating. Find us on Facebook at Sunderland Pride.
Hi, you're listening to Pride Radio. You're probably sat there thinking, I've not heard this voice before, and that's because you haven't. I'm Simon Noble, and today I'll be chatting to human rights activist Peter Tatchell. Here at Pride Radio, we are dedicating an hour show every Sunday evening throughout May to recognise Ida Hobbit, which stands for the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersexism and Transphobia. It is globally recognised on the 17th of May every year. This date was selected to mark the decision to remove homosexuality from the International Classification of Disease of the World Health Organization in 1990. Since this time, the movement has gained momentum globally and is observed in many businesses and sectors. The purpose of Ida Hobbit is to coordinate events that raise awareness of LGBT plus equality issues, as well as spotlight awareness of the progress being made across the globe. The date is marked in over 132 different countries, and this is increasing. This year, the theme is Together, Resisting, Supporting, Healing, and LGBT Great has called on member firms to commemorate the day in the form of a virtual initiative to showcase some of our industry-specific role models. Entrants represent LGBT plus and supportive allies and 12 different investment and savings firms. We'll be speaking to leaders, influencers, activists and organisations about their work and the opportunities and obstacles they see that the community faces over the coming years. Today, we are delighted to be chatting to Peter Tatchell, who stands up for human rights, democracy, global justice and LGBTI freedom, and is also the director of the Peter Tatchell Foundation. Hi, Peter. How are you? Are you well?
I'm great, thank you. Looking forward to today's interview.
So one of the very first questions I want to ask you, if that's okay, is about the very first UK Pride. So you helped organise the UK Pride in 1972, didn't you? What was that like?
Well, I was one of about 30 or 40 people who organised Britain's first ever Pride parade, which took place in July 1972 in London. It was a very bold gamble because back then, most LGBT plus people were still in the closet. A very small proportion actually were out and open. Very, very few dared show their face in public. So we just hit on the idea, everybody is saying that we should be ashamed of being gay. Let's turn it around. Let's say, no, we're proud. So let's have a gay pride parade. And that march was, to our great pleasure, attended by between 700 and 1,000 people. It was very heavily policed. The public reactions were very mixed. About a third of the public were very hostile. They booed, jeered, shouted insults, some even threw bottles, cans, and coins at us. Another third were sort of indifferent, really, or maybe amazed is the perhaps best word. They were amazed that LGBT plus people would dare show their faces in public. And about another third were actually supportive. They cheered, clapped, and said, good on you. So that gave us the confidence that we could build on this and that we could have Pride the year after and the year after and so on. And so it's been, and so it's grown, you know. It grew from very small beginnings.
Well, first of all, thank you. you really did lay the groundwork, if you like. Obviously, Pride now is a very different beast, if you like. What do you think about the way Pride has evolved today?
Well, like a lot of the veterans from that early era, I feel very disappointed and frustrated that most Pride parades, certainly in the big cities, have strayed far away from the roots of what Pride should be about. In cities like, you know, London, Birmingham, Manchester, Pride is now much more corporate. It's not very political. And in fact, we see, you know, big issues around some of the people who are allowed to march in the parade. The police, the Home Office, arms manufacturers, fossil fuel producers, and so on. I think we have to ask ourselves, does Pride just be a party? Is it just a celebration? Is that all it is? Or should it actually be a march, a parade, a carnival, but with a social conscience, with a political message? We've made huge gains, but there are still battles and issues to fight. And I think it's very disappointing the way in which most Pride parades and festivals do not profile LGBT plus human rights demands. They're just basically a big party. And that is not what Pride was originally about, or indeed what it should be about today.
I totally agree with you. I think it's a real shame that Pride is a party and isn't really political anymore. How do you think a young gay person like myself, how would I best kind of, well, make it political again, do you think?
Well, I think we have to lobby the organisers of the Pride parades to say that, yeah, we're happy to have a celebration and a party. That's fine. That's great. But let's also give it a human rights dimension as well. Let's, you know, forget that there are still issues that affect our community which haven't been resolved, like the scale of bullying of LGBT plus kids in our schools, and like the enormous level of homophobic, biphobic, and transphobic hate crime on our streets. We need to profile those issues. And I think if we did so, not only would the Pride parades get media coverage, but they'd get media coverage in a way that drew attention to these unfinished battles we still have to fight and win.
You've said in the past that LGBT plus equality is a limited and insufficient goal. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, of course, equality is important. We all want to get rid of discrimination. But simply seeking equality within society as it is not the same as LGBT plus liberation. I say that because society as it is deeply flawed. So just to give you one example, for many years, most people in the LGBT plus community were saying, we want LGBT inclusion in relationship and sex education lessons in schools. And that's great, except that that relationship and sex education in schools is still woefully inadequate. So it not only fails LGBT plus kids, it also fails straight and cisgender kids as well. So we can't just simply ask for equal rights. We have to ask for the kinds of policies or ideas or demands that will address the issues in our community. And that means, I think, having an agenda for changing society, not merely assimilating and conforming to what society is.
I think what we're going to do now, Peter, is you've been asked to provide us with some songs. We're going to play the first one. Would you like me to introduce it, or would you like to introduce it, Peter?
You can introduce it.
Thank you very much. So the first song is Search for the Hero by M People. Oh, life, that love that's walked out of me.
Ida Hobbit 2021 on Pride Radio.
With Sunderland LGBT Plus Network, supporting, educating and celebrating. Find us on Facebook at Sunderland Pride.
In conversation with Peter Tatchell.
Welcome back to Pride Radio. I am here talking to Peter Tatchell. Peter, would you like to tell us the reasons for choosing that song?
Well, I love this song by M People because it evokes what I'm all about. I think we all have the hero inside of us. We have to search for it and find it. You know, tens of thousands of mostly unknown, unsung LGBT plus people have been involved in the campaign to repeal anti-LGBT plus laws. They searched and found the hero inside of them to stand up for our human rights. They marched in the streets. They lobbied their member of parliament. They did these things which produced the changes we now enjoy.
Fantastic. Great song and a great reason for choosing that song as well. Thank you, Peter. You have concerns about the criminalisation of consenting sex involving young people under 16 who are of similar ages. What are the issues that concern you?
According to the research we have, the average age of first sexual experience in the UK for both gay and straight kids is now 13 or 14. That is below the lawful age of consent. So more than half of all young people are committing a criminal offence. And under the Sexual Offences Act 2003, the maximum penalty, even if they're of similar ages, for example, two 15-year-olds, the maximum penalty is 5 years in a youth detention facility and placement on the sex offenders register alongside rapists and paedophiles. To me, that is so, so wrong. Of course, young people should ideally delay their first sexual experience. They shouldn't have sex at an early age, but if they do, they shouldn't be criminalised in that way.
It's a really interesting topic, if you like, isn't it? Because I think for a lot of people who have children, they don't like to think about what their 15-year-old son or daughter is getting up to. But you're right, if they get together with somebody their own age, which a lot of people do at that age, they could end up with a serious offence. And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It would be unfair for that person to be put on a register for that or to have them those 5 years. So I think it's a very interesting conversation. You've been very politically active over the years, Peter. I've had a look at a few things that you've done. But I was just curious, what are your greatest achievements? What have you achieved over the past few decades?
Well, I don't think it's ever down to me. I think it's been a cumulative, collective effort by the whole LGBT plus community. You know, we've all contributed in lots of different ways. But I think it's worth remembering that up until 1999, Britain had by volume the largest number of anti-LGBT laws of any country in the world, some of them dating back centuries. Yet, just 14 years later, with the legalization of same-sex marriage in 2013, we had some of the best laws. Yet that is a phenomenal, extraordinary pace of social reform and change. It's the most successful battle for law reform in British history, if not world history. So I want to pay tribute to the many thousands, the many tens of thousands of LGBT plus people and our straight friends and allies who helped make that possible. So far as our collective achievements are concerned, oh, they are so many. You know, we ended the ban on LGBT plus people in the armed forces, secured an equal age of consent of 16 for everyone, repealed Section 28, allowed same-sex couples to foster and adopt children, enacted legislation to protect LGBT plus people against discrimination in employment, and then later in goods and services, secured civil partnerships, and then same-sex marriage. So those are extraordinary, phenomenal achievements, and we can all be so, so proud of what we've done.
Fantastic. And I just want to share something if I can. Section 28 was repealed when I was in high school. High school was a terrible time for me, I'll be perfectly honest. I have since become a governor of my old high school. And last year, I was invited back to attend a LGBT-themed assembly where openly gay and lesbian teaching staff were able to stand at the front and say, this is my experience and this is why it is good. This is why equality matters, basically. And this is why it's okay to be who you are. And to see that change was incredible for me. What I think we'll do now is we're going to jump very quickly to another song. We're going to play a song by a man called Tony Hightower called Find My Victory.
As sure as a flame burning a heart, no one believed we'd get this far. Some say they don't know why we try. I guess it's a matter of our pride. I've spent a lifetime of emotions, shed an ocean full of tears, but still there is a moment of fear. I will run right through it. I will run to prove it.
Oh,
You are listening to Pride Radio. I am still here with Peter Tatchell. Peter, would you like to tell us the meaning behind that last song?
This song was written as a tribute to the struggles of African-American athletes in the United States, particularly their battle against racism and the achievements of those athletes in breaking barriers, including, of course, very famously, Jesse Owens at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. But the lyrics actually have a much wider resonance. You know, they are really about the battle of any marginalized community to fight for its rights, to stand up with dignity and pride. So I think this song really does have a universal appeal, including to the LGBT plus community.
Incredible. You talked a little bit about there about other marginalized groups, and the question I want to ask you basically, and I wonder if this is where intersectionality might come into play. We've talked about achievements, but the fight isn't over by any means. And so what is your hope for the next 20 years? And does that involve some view or working with other groups?
Well, of course, I was involved in the Gay Liberation Front in London in the early 1970s. And although we were LGBT plus focused, we also worked in solidarity with the women's, Black, Irish, and working class liberation movements, because we saw that all these struggles are interconnected and that we as LGBT plus people are not just LGBT plus, we are also Black, poor, woman, disabled, and so on. That's why it's so, so important to show solidarity with other communities that are also being victimized. Last year, I organized a 50th anniversary Pride March to commemorate the formation of the Gay Liberation Front. And we had five demands. Four of them were on LGBT plus issues, and the other one was solidarity with Black Lives Matter. That's because we understood that our struggles are interconnected and that we must stand in solidarity, not only with Black, Asian, and other people of color within our community, but also those wider Black, Asian, and people of color communities in Britain and around the world. You know, standing together, we are stronger. Now, in terms of the issues that really challenge us for the future, well, number one has got to be the battle for trans respect, rights, and dignity, in particular to reform the Gender Recognition Act, to ensure that trans people can self-ID via statutory declaration. You know, it works in other countries. There's no reason why it shouldn't work here in the UK. We also have to secure compensation for gay and bisexual men who were convicted under historic past anti-gay laws. Some of these men were imprisoned, others were fined, many lost their jobs, their marriages broke up if they were married, some were beaten up in the street by homophobes, some were evicted from their homes by homophobic landlords. So these men paid a very great price, and we're talking about, from 1885 onwards, about 100,000 men who were victimized under homophobic laws. And of those, probably about 10 to 15,000 are still alive today. So my Peter Tatchell Foundation is continuing to press the government to compensate these men, as has already been agreed by the German government. The German government has agreed that men who were victimized under anti-gay laws up until fairly recently, they should all receive compensation, financial compensation. And we think that should apply here in the UK as well. Another issue is the ongoing mistreatment of LGBT plus refugees who come to Britain to seek a safe haven and often find themselves put in an asylum detention center, which is basically a glorified prison by another name, or forced to live in a squalid home office hostel and forced to live on a measly £37 a week. How can you live on £37 a week? I mean, that's just, you know, for food, for clothing, travel, toiletries, a mobile phone. It's impossible. So that has to change. And perhaps the final issue, although there are many, many others, we do need to ensure that when mandatory relationship and sex education in schools comes in next September, or this coming September, that it is actually genuinely LGBT plus inclusive. At the moment, we don't know exactly what kind of issues and what kind of content will happen. So it could be very superficial or it could be quite good. We just don't know. Plus, faith schools are going to be given some degree of exemption from the new mandatory requirement. They will have to teach the mandatory content, whatever that is, and it's still undefined, but they will also be able to teach, according to their religious ethos, that same-sex relations and transgenderism are immoral and sinful. That is not good enough. So there are battles that we still have to fight and win.
Right. Yeah, there's quite a lot to unpick there, and a lot of our listeners will be wondering how they can get involved, or how they might be able to help you or your foundation or even others influence these decisions. And we're going to talk about that in a little while. What we're going to do now is we're going to play another fantastic song, and this is a great song. Bear with me if I don't get this quite right. This is William Orbit, Barber's Adagio for Strings.
Big Interview, part of Ida Hobbit 2021 on Pride Radio.
With Sunderland LGBT Plus Network, supporting, educating and celebrating. Find us on Facebook at Sunderland Pride.
In conversation with Peter Tatchell.
Welcome back. You're listening to Pride Radio. We are still here with Peter Tatchell. Peter, William Orbit, what were your reasons for choosing that song?
Well, this track combines my twin loves of classical music and electronic dance music. So the way it segues from William Barber's original classical version into the trancey version, I think is amazing and wonderful. I find it really energizing and uplifting. I just close my eyes and it transports me to a different place, a place of serenity, excitement, a whole lot of conflicting emotions and feelings, but all positive and all good.
Thank you. It's a great song. I have to admit, when I first saw it written down, I was like, I don't think I've heard that. And then I had a quick listen. I was like, oh, it's a classic. Everyone's heard of it. So thank you very much. You yourself and your peers played quite a major role in the battle for marriage equality. However, you've said you're not a fan and you've proposed an alternative. Can you just explain a little bit about that for me, please?
Well, first, let me say that obviously, the ban on same-sex marriage was homophobic discrimination, and that's why we had to fight to repeal it. But having said that, I tend to share the feminist critique of marriage as a patriarchal, sexist institution. We should never forget that marriage was never originally about love. It was about property. It was about a way to ensure that property was passed through the male line from father to son, and also a way to ensure that women were the property of a specific man. So on those grounds, you know, I do not like the history of marriage. And even today, of course, we see residues of that. I mean, the word husband, an alternative meaning for husband is to manage and control, which sort of symbolizes the way in which many men have treated their wives throughout history. Also, we see a residue in the way, still in some instances, the father of the bride gives away his daughter to the husband-to-be. And that sort of symbolizes the passing of women from one man to another. So on those grounds, I'm not a great fan of marriage. But I think that people should have the right to marry if that's what they want. It's up to people to decide, not me. So I'm really glad the law no longer discriminates. Having said all that, for what, two or three decades, I've championed the idea of an alternative to marriage. Now, I know we have civil partnerships, but civil partnerships are basically marriage by another name. The language is different, but all the rights and responsibilities are essentially the same as marriage. What I would like to see is a new arrangement or a new alternative. I wouldn't abolish marriage. I wouldn't abolish civil partnerships, but I think people would have a third option. And I've called it a civil commitment pact. Under this pact, a person would be able to nominate any significant other in their life. So it might be a partner, or it might be a favorite niece or nephew, a lifelong best friend, a brother or sister. And they would then be able to nominate that person as their next of kin and inheritance beneficiary in the event of their death. At the moment, if you're single, if you're not in a civil partnership and you're not in a marriage, there's no automatic way of ensuring who your next of kin is. It would probably by default go to your parents or any children if you had them, but lots of LGBT people don't have children. Perhaps their parents are dead. So under this system, you can nominate any significant other. And also, the law discriminates against single people in terms of inheritance. So if you're in a marriage or a civil partnership, you can pass on a huge amount of money and property to your partner without paying inheritance tax. But if you're single, whoever you give your estate to in your will, they have to pay a huge amount of inheritance tax. And that's very unfair. It discriminates against single people. So that's one issue that my proposal would resolve. The other one is when it comes to people in a romantic relationship, I would allow couples to pick and mix from a menu of rights and responsibilities in order to create a partnership agreement that was tailored to their specific needs. At the moment, with civil partnerships and marriages, it's one size fits all. You know, the terms of the contract are written in stone. You can't change them. You can't vary them. You can't amend them. It's like it or not. Now, I think that under this system, you know, that I'm proposing, it'd be much better because, you know, today in modern societies, there's a huge variety of relationships and lifestyles. I mean, some couples live together, others live apart. Some maintain financial independence. Some share their finances. Some have kids, others don't. So, as I said, this would enable couples to produce a partnership agreement tailored to their particular personal needs. I think that's much, much better, a much better way to go. And it would mean, I think, that also going through the list of rights and responsibilities and having to sign them off individually, both partners, that I think would make people think very carefully and, you know, consciously about what they were getting into. And it might result in people making wiser, more responsible choices. So that's an idea. It's up for debate, but I think it is the way to go as society and relationships evolve.
That's it's really interesting because I'm going to ask you this question today, and I was interested to see what you were going to say because I am a single guy. I don't think I'll ever get married. Marriage has never been for me. I don't think it's not something that I think I've ever wanted. So I was interested to see what your answer is, and what you've actually described to me makes a lot of sense, and it's certainly something that I could see myself doing with somebody who I was especially close to as an alternative to marriage. So you've won me over. I think that sounds fantastic. So I think what we'll do now is you're Peter Tatchell. Everyone listening knows that, but there is also the Peter Tatchell Foundation. And I was just wondering, you know, could you tell us a bit about that? Why did you set it up? What work does it do?
Well, in fact, it was set up by friends and supporters in 2011. People thought, look, I've been working for 45 years unpaid without an office for LGBT plus and other human rights. I needed some institutional, organizational backing, you know. I needed an office, I needed some staff support. You know, I get up to 800 or 1,000 messages and requests every single day. Even with the one assistant I have, it's almost impossible to keep up. I'm exhausted and tired all the time. But without the foundation, I'd be even in a worse state. So the aim of the foundation is really to defend, educate, promote and support human rights in Britain and around the world. About half of our work is on LGBT plus issues and the other half on broader, wider issues of democracy and human rights and equality. So we do a lot of work around issues like free speech, civil liberties and abroad supporting democracy and human rights struggles in Russia, Uganda, Pakistan, China, and many, many other countries. What we try and do is amplify the voices of human rights defenders in those countries and highlight human rights abuses that are taking place. And of course, we lobby governments, media, and so on to take action, to shine a light on these human rights abuses and to get redress for the victims.
Sounds great. And there'll be a lot of people listening who think these are worthy causes and I want to do my bit. So how can people get involved with your foundation and how can people help you and what you're setting out to achieve?
Well, we are a very small foundation. There's just two of us, although we now have an additional assistant coming on part-time. So we're very, very tiny, so it's limited what we can do. We are London-based. I'm sorry we're so London-centric, but we just don't have the resources to reach out to all sections of the UK. I'm very apologetic about that. But you can go to our website, petertatchellfoundation.org, and there you'll find a huge resume of all the different campaigns and education and support work we do. In the top right-hand corner of the website, there's a little button which says Join Us. And if you give us your email address, we will then send you a weekly Peter Tatchell Foundation bulletin, which is a summary of a cross-section of LGBT plus and other human rights issues, some of which are very funny and quirky, others much more serious. But it's entirely free. It doesn't cost anything. Subscribing to receive the bulletin is without charge. The other thing you can do, of course, is next to the Join Us button, there's another button which says Donate. So if you are able to, or you know a friend who's able to, please consider making a donation. We don't have any institutional funding or government funding, no big foundations, no great charities back us. We all depend entirely on donations from well-wishers. So if you can afford to give us a pound or two or three or four a month, that would really help us. And of course, we're all suffering during this COVID period. We have lost quite a lot of donors, or donors have had to reduce the donations. So if you can perhaps step in and help contribute a bit, that would be really, really appreciated. Every now and then we do put out campaign materials that you can assist with. So we have a campaign currently called Stop Dithering. It's on our website. Stop Dithering is a web campaign to try and pressure the government to ban LGBT plus conversion therapy. As I think you know, nearly 3 years ago, the government promised to outlaw it, but it still hasn't happened, more than 1,000 days later. So that's just not good enough. So we are working with others to press the government to honor that pledge. And so if you go on our website or just go to stopdithering.com, you can then sign the petition that we will be delivering to the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, in the coming weeks. So please do that. That's a way in which you can help our ongoing work on this issue.
Fantastic. I have signed a petition for this cause, but I don't know if I've signed yours, unless it's the same one. And you've definitely got a subscriber in me, so thank you very much. What we're going to do now is we're going to play out your last song, which is a Diana Ross song, which is a fantastic song.
I got
The Big Interview, part of Ida Hobbit 2021 on Pride Radio.
With Sunderland LGBT Plus Network, supporting, educating and celebrating. Find us on Facebook at Sunderland Pride.
In conversation with Peter Tatchell.
You're listening to Pride Radio. We're still here with Peter. Peter, why Diana Ross?
For our community, the LGBT plus community, someday in Western countries, we're making big progress. But for the hundreds of millions of LGBT plus people in the nearly 70 countries that still criminalize same-sex relations and the 100 plus countries that still have no protection against discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity, someday is someday, someday in the future. And the all is about all, you know, all of us, you know, black and white, gay and straight, trans and cisgender, old and young, religious and not religious. Someday we all will be free. So I think it's a great anthem that expresses my hopes, aspirations and dreams.
And I agree. Fantastic song to end the hour. I just want to say, Peter, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. First of all, getting to know you and getting to chat to you and also learning a few things. And I will be on your website and signing up. So thank you so much for being here today, Peter.
Well, thank you. And thank you to all your listeners. I just want to repeat, for all of you, whoever you are, who contributed to our battle for LGBT plus freedom, a huge thank you. And please hold on to the hope that I have expressed in my motto, which is, don't accept the world as it is, dream of what the world could be, and then help make it happen.
can't deny. Some days just don't feel right. I think I feel much better.
Big Interview, part of Ida Hobbit 2021 on Pride Radio.
With Sunderland LGBT Plus Network, supporting, educating and celebrating. Find us on Facebook at Sunderland Pride.